and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of March 13th. I'm John Gibson, and back with us in Tokyo and getting back on his feet again is my buddy Jim Allen. How you feeling, buddy?
Well, I feel great, and I'm really happy to be back. And then the truth is, yeah, I'm a little tired, but I'm hanging in there, and I'm really I'm kind of enjoying the WBC as much as I can from the sidelines.
Uh-huh.
But basically more focused on, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for players who are out injured now. I mean, I always had sympathy, but now it's more like, oh, man, I've been there kind of.
Right.
And yes. It does, you know, you have to watch with one eye and pay attention to your rehab with the other. And it's hard to keep it's a little hard to strike a balance. But yes, so I'm hanging in there, and thank you for having me on the show when I'm, you know, not 100%.
Well, no problem. I mean, we just want you to heal, so don't rush it. You don't have to worry about getting back too soon. We'll hold down the fort. How's that?
Okay, that's good. I'm sure that because our forts, you know, it's not the most stable thing, can blow away in a soft breeze.
Well, yes. So don't talk too much.
Okay, no more hot air jokes, dude.
All your hot air will cause a soft breeze. On this week's show, we've got a bunch of stuff for you. We've got front office executive / scout Dan Evans of the Blue Jays as a guest. We're going to talk about the WBC, and of course, we have our PL predictions, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
So on Friday night, I went to the WBC game, the China-Japan game, where Japan wrapped up a 3-0 first-round record. So it's unfortunately for Jim, that was not the prediction he made on that stuff. But we'll skip all past that. We'll skip right past that. And I talked to Dan Evans now. Dan Evans has worked as a GM or front office executive for teams including the White Sox, the Cubs, the Dodgers, and the Mariners. And now he's with the Blue Jays. And we've been speaking back and forth for years, and I invited him on the show, I think it was almost 2 years ago, and we just haven't been able to make it work, and I've tried to contact the Blue Jays PR department and go through the various hoops that you have to jump through to make things happen, and it just didn't happen up until this year. And finally, and actually, Jim, before we started taping, Jim was telling me that he bumps into Dan all the time. I haven't even met Dan at a park by accident, and in fact, there were times where we were supposed to be at the same park on the same day, and his plans changed, or my plans changed, or something happened, and we just haven't been able to hook up. So not only did I see him and meet him face-to-face for the first time, we went ahead and did an interview, too, to boot. So it was a really fun night on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, usually when I'm at the park before a game, I'll look around in the stands. And I guess Cebu's the best example because Cebu, the scouts always sit in the same place.
Right.
And the crowd is small during BP. And I can usually spot the scouts who are there from the field. So it seems like I run into Dan at Cebu or on the field at some of the parks where they still let scouts on the field. I turn around and he's there.
Right. It was nice to put a voice to the Twitter face that we see and shake hands with him. And I always tell you guys, I'm not really nervous around big name people normally. But for some reason, I had a mild case of the jitters with him. And I think probably it was because I'm standing right in front of a guy who I'd heard of a lot, and I know he had wielded a lot of power with my Dodgers, and that's probably what it was. And then the other thing is he's a Blackhawks fan, and I'm a Kings fan, so maybe there was a little bit of rivalry in the blood or something like that. I don't know, because those two teams in the NHL are putting together a pretty big rivalry in the playoffs. But anyway, we had a great talk, so let's check it out. All right, joining us this week is Toronto Blue Jays scout and Pacific Rim's operations director, Dan Evans. And, man, we've been trying to have you on the show for years and years, and it's finally happening. It's a thrill for us to talk to you.
Well, I'm happy to be here. This is a good time. It's a great place to go, and I really enjoy your broadcast every week, so I'm thrilled to be a part of it.
All right, thank you very much for that. Now, let's jump right into it. First of all, I know you've been following me on Twitter as well as some of the other
Japanese writers or writers of Japanese baseball, the guys who disseminate out here. Where do you rank this league when you compare it to other international feeder systems for major league teams?
Well, this is elite baseball for me, and I've seen the evolution of Japanese baseball. I'd say in the last 15 years, the game has grown exponentially and is so close to the big league game. I think we see it in a tournament like this where you can see the caliber of play being so high. And I think the really great Japanese players can easily play in the big leagues. In fact, I think every player on this WBC team could come over and have a job in the big leagues. I think what's gone on, John, in the last, I'd say 15 years, is people in this country have woken up in the morning to North American baseball. Mm. They've watched MLB every morning, 5-6 days a week.
How many years did you say?
Well, since
it's been 20.
Yeah, but since Ichiro came over, they're
Nomo.
Watching. Well, no, but see, the difference for Nomo is they only broadcast Nomo starts.
Right.
So you got 25 games. Now, once Matsui and Ichiro came to the big leagues, you're getting games every night.
Okay.
So I think the growth and awareness of the MLB game has been extraordinary, and I think now you see it in the swing paths. You see a different player now. This is a great group of Japanese players, an elite group, 26 and under, and they all watched Matsui and Ichiro their entire youth.
Right, right.
And they're watching a different brand of baseball than their predecessors.
Right.
And I think subsequently you're seeing the level of play pick up another level as a result.
So the ranking?
Oh, I think it's so close to the big leagues, it's amazing. And there's nobody close to it in terms of talent, in terms of the way the game is played, but most importantly, the passion that the fans here have for baseball, which for me is therapeutic. I come over here and I fall in love again with the game because the people here truly love baseball.
True. All right, now you guys had Muninin Kawasaki on your team with the Blue Jays for a while, but there really haven't been that many Japanese position players to go over to the States and actually contribute a lot. Why do you see that?
Well, I think it's a couple reasons. I think in the United States, we put the best athletes at shortstop and center field.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the best athletes go on the mound. And as a result, I think there's not as many great middle infielders as there are in North America. I just think we have a different philosophical approach than the Japanese game.
Interesting.
I also think that because there hasn't been a standout middle infielder on TV every day playing in the big leagues, I think as a result, there's a little bit lacking of kids looking up to somebody.
Uh-huh.
And I think every kid needs to see someone that they emulate, that they pattern their game around.
Gotcha.
I still see to this day guys come to the plate and do the Ichiro squat, and
right.
You know, a couple guys do the arm situation, but they don't have a middle infielder to replicate. I also believe that because many of the games here are played on turf, for some players they come over and they play on the dirt in the United States and in Canada, and they have a trouble acclimating themselves to that game. But I think it's really because of the philosophical approach. We don't bring over when a young kid is an elite athlete, we put them in the middle of the diamond, but what you do here is you put them in the center of the diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And the subsequent change, I believe, is a philosophical approach that really radically alters the careers of a lot of players. People like Maeda and some of the great athletes that are on the mound now, many of those guys would be shortstops in the States.
Now, you talk about the best athletes, and we've seen guys like Ichiro and Hideki Matsui go over to the States, but what is the profile? What are the kinds of athletes or the kind of players who MLB teams are looking for here in Japan?
Well, I think an organization like ourselves, we're just looking for the greatest players we can find, regardless of their origination, their nationality, where they played. And I think that the critical component of it is it's a two-way street. I've had a lot of success bringing players over with the teams I've been with, and I really think you need to make a real commitment to the player.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the player is making the commitment to you.
Exactly.
And John,
the
reason I say that is this. They're stars over here. They're taking risk coming over into an environment they'd never been in before, when it'd be very comfortable staying here and being one of the best players in a 12-team league. I think the component that's the difference is, if they're taking that sort of risk, the infrastructure with your organization has to reflect what you're doing with that player. You have to give that player every opportunity to thrive in his new environment, interpreter, interaction with the player from a staff and front office standpoint. I just think too many teams treat players coming over from Japan as if they're just another player. My history is you treat them as who they are, which are stars that are coming over to help your club play. And our mindset with the Blue Jays is if we can get a player from the NPB to come and help our club try to win a world championship, we're all in. And we'll do everything we can to give that player a foundation with the Blue Jays to let him thrive in his new environment.
You hear that, people? It's not just about hitting the baseball, catching the baseball.
No, that's 3 hours of the day that the players are comfortable with. It's the other 21 hours. And, you know, the transition is such, look at all the American players that come over and struggle over here. It's not a one-sided problem.
Exactly.
It's you're playing in a new game with new strategy, a new language, new conditions, new culture. And I think for everybody who comes over, either direction, east or west, I think it's all about surrounding them with an environment that a culture that allows them to use their skills to succeed. I think when you just drop a guy in, as some teams have done, with a weak interpreter, an organization that doesn't understand the culture, doesn't understand the environment, you know what, I think it's an easy situation to fail. And John, I'll be honest with you, I learned the easy way. I had those players in Los Angeles. I had Nomo, I had Ishii, I had Kita-san, I had Ichiro, I had, you know, I had Kenji Kojima, and Jojima, I'm sorry. And when you give them an environment where they're comfortable and you communicate well with them, you get a great player because they are great players.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's the mound's the same distance and the bases are the same. The challenge is not the game. The challenge is the other 20 or 21 hours during the day where they have to acclimate themselves to a new environment. And that's a challenge for anybody.
Gotcha. All right. Now, what are you guys looking for when you come over in terms of the pitchers? Are you looking for power? Because I always hear about major league teams looking for power pitchers, and they don't care so much about anything but the speed gun. But then the players come over, and they talk about how these Japanese pitchers have such great control, and they can pinpoint. What are you guys looking for on the mound?
Well, I'm not a gun guy, never have been, never will be.
No guns.
I don't even have a radar gun with me on this trip.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's feel. You know, you get a better athlete on the mound, as we talked about earlier. You know, the better athlete goes on the hill here. So right away you have better feel, better mechanics, repeating delivery. You get a bigger assortment of pitches because they're a more athletic pitcher, a better fielder that can handle bunts. So for me, I think what I look for is a guy who can execute in-game situations and get guys out at the big league level. You know, when they come across the ocean 6,000 to 8,000 miles away, they still have to throw strikes and they have to get guys out, regardless of where they're from. And I think what a Japanese pitcher, what many of them have done in my career, what I've seen, is they come over and they can adapt.
Mm-hmm.
Because here, they pitch to contact, they're not afraid of the bat, whereas a lot of American pitchers will go for the strikeout. Here, they're looking to induce contact because they trust their fielders and they trust their environment. And they've been in a mindset their whole career that the hitter's probably not a strikeout guy. So pitch to their strengths and get them out. So when I come over here, I don't look for any one type of guy. I try to kind of sample from all 12 clubs. I see everybody play. I see all the top players. And as a result, I try to find guys who could come over to North America and contribute to our cause.
And you've got the difference in the mounds. Sometimes you've got a different ball. It's slightly different in size and all that stuff. How do you take all these numbers that you see with the Japanese pitchers and extrapolate or figure out, project how they're going to do in the major leagues?
What a great question. And I love the fact that you understand that the mound and the ball is different. And the ball used to be decidedly different. Now it's more conforming.
It's closer, yeah.
But you know, you see teams now changing the mounds, getting a little bit more major league oriented. Some mounds that were really soft now are harder, and you start to see
here in Japan.
Yeah, you start to see some transition. But I think all those variables is what makes scouting such a fun thing, because there is, as you know, there's no absolutes, and you're never 100% right. So when you look at a player and you, I think the real way you got to do it, you got to see the guy a lot. Mm-hmm. And you have to see the guy in as many environments as you can. You have to see him on the road. You have to see him when he's not in his natural habitat at home, where the mound's groomed for him. But that's the same thing in the big leagues, too. You know, there's a lot of pitchers who their mound is tailored at home, and then on the road they're a train wreck because they can't pitch to the same thing. So what I try to do is I use various apps to watch them as much as I can. Mm-hmm. Back in the States. I mean, my typical day, John, is I'm at a big league game or at a minor league game. You know, at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm flipping on my Chromebook or my iPad, and I'm watching a Japanese game just to familiarize myself with as many starts and as many outings as I can. But I think one of the challenges is you really don't know. But you don't know the big league guys either. You don't know the great college players or the great high school guys in the States. You don't know in the North American game if that's going to translate to a great professional player. So the same conditions are here. To me, adaptable guys in any environment, whether it's North America, Japan, Korea, Dominican, Venezuela, adaptable guys who throw strikes succeed.
Right.
Because as they age and their game changes, they're able to adapt to the game. For me, John, to be honest with you, instincts rule. A guy with pitching instincts mm-hmm. will thrive throughout his career because as he loses his fastball, he'll understand how to get guys out. You look at Kuroda. Kuroda was a phenomenal pitcher for an extended period. Nomo, the greatest character of any pitcher I've ever been around in my career. And I saw Hideo up close and personal go from being a power guy who was a strikeout-oriented guy to a pitch-to-contact guy in the States later in his career when he didn't have the same zip on his fastball but knew how to get guys out. Mm-hmm. So to me, the adaptability is something you'd never really know. But if you do your homework, sometimes you find out about a guy and you find out that, hey, maybe this is a guy who could make that transition.
Okay. All right. Last question. This WBC, I love it. I've loved it from the very beginning. Before we started taping, you said you've been to every WBC and all the Final Fours and all that stuff. Is this tournament trending up, down, treading water? What is it doing?
I think it's trending up, and I think it's trending up big time. And I think we're going to see this week here in Tokyo why the game is thriving worldwide. I mean, this is going to be one heck of a fun week. There's going to be some really good games played. Netherlands, Israel, Cuba, and Japan. Doesn't get much better than that. Whoever comes out of this bracket is going to be a really formidable team going to Los Angeles. I think, like you, when you come to the games, any fan who's attended, you feel the electricity in this ballpark. The Tokyo Dome is rocking here all week. And it'll rock in Dodger Stadium. And I saw the games in AT&T 4 years ago, in Petco years ago. I think people, if they attend the game, they recognize this is a happening event. I wouldn't have missed this for the world. This, for me, is an incredible environment to watch the best players in the world play for something that really matters to them. Playing for their country matters a lot, John. And for some of these players, it's their only opportunity to ever play for their country.
Yeah.
You know, they don't get in the Olympic environment sometimes. And as a result, they recognize how vital it is to thrive in this environment. And, you know, what we're going to see this week is we're going to see three teams come in here and try to ruin the home team's chances.
Yeah.
And, you know, the crowd is here an hour before the game. They're telling you with their feet. There's 44,000 people here, and they're here an hour to an hour and a half
against China.
Thank you.
It's the team they're going to win.
And, John, from the first pitch of the game, totally into the game. Mm. It's not like it was an environment where people had to be nurtured and had to feel like, oh, you know, maybe I should get into this ballgame. They're in this ballgame start to finish. So I think what we'll see this week is these three teams come in. What a great environment to play in. If you're an opponent, this is a perfect type of environment to play because you don't have to worry about getting up for the game. You're up. You know that there's a crowd that wants you to go home unhappy, but they're not booing you. Look at the ovations they gave out this weekend. A couple of great plays. A Cuban kid made an incredible play 2 days ago. Standing ovation from the Tokyo Dome crowd. An extremely knowledgeable baseball crowd. And for me, that's why the WBC is going to thrive. And I love it. I hope and pray that they don't mess around with it, because I think it's a wonderful environment for a scout like myself to see the best players in the world on a grand stage. That's what it's all about for me.
All right, so up, down, trending up.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah, trending up.
All right, well, I don't think they're going to catch your passion, but thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
All right, thanks again, Dan, for your time. I really appreciate it. That was awesome.
It was indeed, you know, it was indeed. I kept thinking, wow, right on, right on. And some of the things I'm thinking, wow, that is so true. And I had thought about it. You know, these are things I had thought about in some of them, because I'm not a scout. But some of these things are things that I'd thought about and never had quite vocalized or verbalized as well as he did. And I thought, oh, absolutely right. Certainly the bit about the influence of MLB, because 15 years ago, I talked to the young MLB stars, the young NPB stars, and asked them, or like Norichika Aoki, I remember.
Right.
You know, when he was a kid, I'd said, did you, you know, you grew up watching games on MLB? He says, like, yeah, I wasn't really conscious of MLB until like after I started playing professionally.
Right.
And I says, so you weren't, that wasn't one of your dreams? He said, no. And this is a guy who basically grew up watching Nomo, but he still was, it was sort of like a different world.
Right.
And it really wasn't until, you know, 15 years ago that the young kids started watching. And now you get kids who turn, you know, who want to play in MLB when they're in junior high school.
Exactly.
You know, after they wait. exactly. So I think that was right on. The next thing I would want to say, and I would politely disagree, was Kazuo Matsui is one of the best players Japan's ever produced. And
okay. Well, you want to politely disagree with whom and
with
what
Dan,
point?
Yeah.
On what point?
Kazuo Matsui didn't succeed in the majors for a variety of reasons, but it wasn't because he wasn't a great athlete. I think it had more to do with the way – but I think to some degree what he said, yes, about the turf is one thing. And he did turn out to be a pretty good player.
I thought he had a fine major league career. I don't know.
He did have a fine major league career.
I don't know
career,
what
but he wasn't a star.
Well, I don't think the expectations were for him to be a star over there. I thought he was going to go over there and be slightly better than average infielder.
When you have a player who's arguably the best position player in Japan in his generation, in a generation that includes Ichiro and Hideki Matsui.
Right.
Right. You expect him to be as good as those guys or in that league?
In terms of what? Because, he wasn't going to be a home run hitter in the major leagues. What he was what he did here was he was a good infielder with speed. And what on earth would make you think or make anyone think he's going to go to the major leagues and continue to hit for power like he did in Japan? And then the speed is always there. It was always there. He wasn't never a terrible infielder.
But it wasn't there. It wasn't there in the majors.
Well, it wasn't
and
there
the fielding
of base
and his
well,
and his fielding
on,
wasn't. And
yeah, but he was never a great fielder. He was not a great fielder here just because he won Golden Gloves or Golden Gloves.
He was pretty good.
He was pretty good, but he was not great.
But
so he wasn't great over there.
Like I said, this is a guy who was as valuable player in Japan as those guys.
I think when he went over and what he did over there, exactly what I had in terms of expectations. I didn't see him failing or exceeding. He was a huge failure.
No, he was a huge failure.
Oh.
He was a huge failure. Because basically
so.
You get the best, you know, one of the best shortstops Japan's ever had. And he goes over there and he's basically a borderline regular for, you know, until basically he makes the adjustments after 3 years and, you know, then he's too beaten up to be a regular.
Well,
but no, I disagree with that. I mean, we're just going to have to disagree on that. But yeah, I was watching his career from early on and I think he was a huge disappointment in that respect. And I've talked with him about it and, you know, I think I talked about this last year. I'm not going to go into that again. But, yeah, I think part of it – I think Buddy's right to the extent that it's not – you know, and, of course, Dan's comment that the best athletes are pitchers is often the case. Well, of course, Kazuo Matsui was a pitcher until he turned pro.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's accurate. And But the other thing is, of course, playing on turf is another thing. And I agree to some extent that his he had the advantage of playing with the liveliest ball.
That
area,
2000 parks,
2000 to 2002, the Pacific League was all using Mizuno balls, which really took off. He was basically, if he'd been playing now, he would have been a 15 home runs a year guy. But he went over there, and he was pretty much with the Mets. He was a huge failure. And as far as not having the best players, no, he was a great player, and he didn't transition for a couple of reasons. And anyway, I'll skip on with that and just leave it. Hayato Sakamoto is, of course, the great example of a guy who won't go to MLB because he's just too big a star here.
That and I'm not sure his game transfers or translates to what MLB. I mean, I see all the athleticism and the potential power and all that stuff, but I think he would be mislabeled. I think it's a good.
I think so too. I mean, I'm with you there, but he's a guy that that people have some. He could certainly play in MLB, but he doesn't want to go from being a star to being some guy. Some guy who plays
a struggling guy. Yeah, I get it.
And I think that the point that Dan made about accommodating the player, the teams have to go out of their way to accommodate the player. And I think this is so true. And I think basically the teams get that now.
Right.
They all understand, we have to accommodate these guys. We have to go out of our way. We have to bend over backwards. But that flies in the face of that major league culture that says these guys are basically rookies here. They don't deserve to be treated like veteran players. I mean, the fans do that. I mean, it's pretty hard to imagine or hard to think of a Japanese player who went to America where there weren't a lot of fans saying, why are we paying this guy money? He's never done anything before.
Right. They tell you that he's a star and they promote him as one, but they don't want to treat him that way.
Exactly. And that's the major league culture. And and this whole bit about, we're going to bend over backwards for these Japanese guys because they're making such a transition. They'll say, well, we didn't do that for this guy. Back in my day, we didn't do that. And there's so much of that seniority nonsense in MLB. This is ridiculous. So, and Dan's right that this is something that's so easy to get wrong.
Yes.
Because even the case with Daisuke Matsuzaka, which is partly Daisuke's fault because he's just not not the smartest, he's not the brightest bulb in the chandelier.
He might even be broken.
Okay. Yeah, the filament was okay.
Cracked, bad filament and all the stuff. Yeah, at this point, yeah.
Right. Okay, but the whole point was, and I've gone through this again too. The Red Sox said, this is the peg major league pitchers go into fit in it. And that might not have been the best case. And then the Red Sox did try to bend over backwards, but they still had, no, this is, we know what's best with you. And I've talked to Craig Shipley and Craig and I disagree about a lot of things, and I love Craig, and he's open to new ideas, and he's often very interested in the way the differences and learning from differences. But he's also, he's not any more hard-headed than I am, I guess. And he's saying, this is what we know to be true.
Whoa, you compared him to you? Good grief.
Yeah. So he's not more hard-headed than me.
All due respect, did you throw that out there before you hit him with that?
No, I said he's not.
No, I know, but I mean, you're comparing him to you.
No, I'm saying, we've had these discussions where now it's, we're not going to discuss this because I know it to be true. And I'm saying, gosh, I'm thinking downside with Craig, you sound like me. Come on, get over it. But anyway, the other thing is, I think that is really interesting was him talking about it. You're never, as a scout, you're never 100% right.
Or wrong.
I'll leave that one open. but here's the thing, it's first of all, and he's talking about Japanese players, but no one's ever 100% right about American players.
Well, that's what he meant.
That's
the whole thing. Yeah,
and,
about any players.
And critics, you see critics of signing Japanese free agent pitchers often forget that predicting the reliability of an American free agent pitcher isn't 100% science either.
No.
They have the advantage of having pitched there. It's more like you know, you know 85% of what's going to happen with a Japanese pitcher. You might know 70%.
Right.
Yeah. Because they're going into a new context where they have to, you know, the travel and all this. Teams make mistakes all the time. But whenever a Japanese player comes over, there's, why are we spending money on a Japanese player who doesn't, you know, they all get hurt.
Yeah. Well.
They're never any good as advertised. Well, it's like, I have two words for that, Barry Zito.
Ouch.
Plays a mean guitar, and he was useful at the end of his contract, but you know, nobody saw that one coming.
Yeah, well, just like you, I like what he said about the away from the park situations and off field mm-hmm. situations, and I think those are important. But I guess for me, the thing that stood out the most was the fact that he said he would bring a radar gun on this trip, and that he's not a radar gun guy. And I just really love that, because I always argue, like, sometimes I'll be tweeting about a pitcher is doing really well, and some fan will tweet back at me, what's his velocity? And I'm like, you know, I don't even look. I don't even look sometimes. I'm looking at the swing. I'm looking at the reaction after the swing of both the pitcher, the catcher, whatever the TV shows you, because you're at the mercy of the camera people or the director. I'm looking at the contact. You know, I'm trying to read what's going on in the situation. The velocity, I mean, everybody, I mean, the other day I was at Tokyo Dome, and Kodai Senga, I'm not rubbing it. I think he hit 97 on the gun, and you know, I was sitting with the scouts. I was talking to Fernando Seguino, the former Fighters guy, and a lot of people said, "Wow, oh," and I'm like, "Yeah, 97, yeah, but that was right down the middle." You know, some of the guys were saying, "Well, he seems to be more of a thrower than a pitcher still," and you know, he's working on it. He's working on his control and all that stuff. But I mean, you know. The gun is the gun. You have to read the situation, and guys are adjusting in the game anyway to the speed that the pitcher's throwing at. So so I'm not worried so much about velocity. And it was really good to hear him talk about how he says, look, I look at how a guy pitches in situations, how he
gets pitches
guys
in
out.
Situations where they're not set up for him, you know, when he's not on his game, when he's on the road.
Right, right. Seeing him in different situations, in different contexts, so that
I think
he can put those
that's
numbers
really
in context.
Good, because he's looking at pitchability, and I think that's so important. And I think that's not only important; it's the most important thing. As for velocity making a difference, it does matter, because velocity can, you know, it gives you that extra little edge, margin for error.
I don't mean to say it doesn't matter.
I mean, yeah, it's a lot easier if you're missing with a 96 mile an hour fastball than with an 86 mile an hour fastball.
Right. I mean, I didn't mean to say it doesn't matter if that's what I said, but
it's not everything. No, absolutely not. But people, yeah, absolutely.
Right. Because we always talk about the Greg Maddoxes and now the Zach Greinkes, who are, you know, not throwing 99 and 96, but still know how to pitch, know how to work batters. Can spot their pitches and can control and command all their pitches, so that when they need to go to something as a tool, they can use it there. It's there for them at their disposal, and they can use that to get guys out instead of just, hey, I'm gonna go to 96 because I know I can make a mistake and get away with it. So I like that whole aspect. And then I also like how he explained the art of pitching to contact. And saying that the pitchers here in Japan are not afraid of the bats. I thought that was a really great expression.
Yeah, I think it's true. But again, you have to look at the context, because when you know, and I'm going to go back to Daisuke Matsuzaka. This is a guy who basically challenged everybody in Japan. And as soon as he had any trouble in America, he basically shied away from contact. Like you see some pitchers when they go up a level – you know, they see people hitting their stuff that they wasn't unhittable before,
right,
or effective before. And instead of adjusting, they adjust themselves out of their game.
Right. Right.
And Matsuzaka certainly did that.
OK.
And so it does happen. I remember Trey Hillman telling me the same thing with Tomoya Yagi when he won the Rookie of the Year.
I'm sorry. I'm having flashbacks.
You know, and that he was a guy who pitched to contact, and they got him because basically he could get guys out. But as soon as, you know, in the spring training, guys were getting swings. He hadn't seen too many guys were getting swings he didn't see in the corporate leagues. and he just started, he stopped throwing strikes. And he said, look, you just got to keep at it. You know, you can get people out. You just have to figure out how to do it. You got the stuff in the sense of, you know, you have movement on your pitches and location. You can do it. But they needed to learn that lesson to pitch within themselves at the next level.
Right.
And I talked about the interesting thing about the WBC was kind of I should say what he said about the WBC was to me quite interesting.
In that?
Well, what I've seen is that it's really a word of mouth deal. When the players play for their country or they play overseas, you know, they tell their teammates what a great experience it was. And then somebody, you know, says, okay, well, if I get that chance, I'm going to do it. And then it's a very slow growth thing. The teams aren't experiencing this. The major league teams aren't experiencing this mm-hmm. because all they're seeing is we're losing our guys. We're risking our stars. They're not saying, oh, play for your country. Well, okay. So I think it's going to grow because of that. It's that group of players who have experienced it is never going to grow smaller. And eventually those guys are going to be in charge of teams.
Right.
It's just something that can really only grow. And it's time for my rant. Is because when I see the people covering the WBC writers on Twitter and they say, this is just amazing. You know, the energy, the fun. And people answer them by saying, stop talking about the WBC. I don't like it. It doesn't interest me. Nobody cares about the WBC. And all I can think of is the word troll, because they're complaining about something that has no impact on them. They make it sound like the WBC is an affront to their sensibilities. Like, who cares? It doesn't bother you. It doesn't affect you. Leave it alone. Just let the adults talk. Like John.
Hashtag high heat.
Awesome. Let the adults talk. This is an adult conversation. Go to your room.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and
like
no computer.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like I read the comments on some of these tweets and I think, well, I'm curious to see what people, you know, this guy's MLB followers are going to say when they like the WBC. If you look, it's so often half of them are going, well, who cares? And I'll tell you who cares. Everybody outside the United States.
Yes, definitely.
Who's following baseball outside the United States loves it. Therefore, to an American fan, nobody cares.
Yeah, definitely. I see it. I don't see the trolling part so much, but I do see people saying, or actually what happens is I don't see a lot of people commenting on it.
Oh.
And even when I was tweeting this morning while watching the USA game, and I could only find on my timeline just a couple people. And that was about it. So, you know, again, in the US. But when the other countries are playing, I tend to see more going on. But we got to move on. We've got to talk about the WBC. So let's make a seamless transition and talk about Samurai Japan. They came in and won their first game. Now, let's talk about what happened in the tune-up games, because this happens all the time. And I think the Japanese public seems to start to panic. And everyone, even the reporters, start to talk about how bad they are. And we counted it up before we started taping. They gave up 16 runs in these tune-up games, and they didn't look very sharp, and they lost to Hanshin, they lost to Taiwan.
It was a Taiwan All-Star team.
All-Star teams, yeah. So they didn't look good at times, and then, you know, they won 9-1 in one of the games, and I think they struggled past Oryx or somebody, was it, 5-3. So yeah, they just didn't look good. The pitching just wasn't on point. But then in game one, Ayumu Ishikawa of Lotte, he was the winner. He threw four sharp innings. Japan beat
Cuba.
They beat Cuba 11-6 was the final score. So again, they gave up a bunch of runs late in the game. I think it was Takahiro Norimoto who gave up some runs. But I was talking to somebody else at the ballpark a couple nights later after game one, and they were saying, why didn't they take Norimoto out of the game earlier? And I said, look, man, this is a whole tournament now where you've got a set of outs that you have to get with a finite number of pitches now for each pitcher. You can't just leave a guy out there or bring somebody in randomly. You've got to really calculate this thing out. Is the guy I bring in to relieve this guy somebody I want to use for this game to get X number of outs and throw the, let's say he's going to have to throw X number of pitches. This is not like the regular season anymore, and it's not really like a regular, let's say, playoff series, because you've got to count out all these outs and think about the number of pitches that the pitches thrown at the same time. It's very difficult. So you can't just, you know, hey, if this is Norimoto was your guy for X number of outs, and you know you're only going to use him for, let's say, one inning or two innings or three innings, whatever your inning count was, then you use him, you know, because you can't just bring in somebody else up because you're going to run out of ammunition, and especially the pitches. You can't just count outs. You got to count the pitches too, and you've got to get them through these things. So I don't think it's that easy decision to go and yank a guy in game one. Your thoughts?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You have to have a plan, which is, oddly enough, Kokubo seems to have been sticking with his plan. Of course, usually his well, you know,
you say it. I don't have to say it. You go ahead.
He has kind of an execution issue. It's not. It's sometimes it's a bad plan and sometimes it's bad execution. So actually, he's pretty good at sticking to his plan.
That's,
I mean, just
say it. He only has a plan.
His plans are just lousy. Now, As I always say, it's better to have a plan than no plan, because at least you can learn from it. And I think that is true. I mean, even if you have a bad plan, you can go back and say what went wrong. Of course, Kokubo, sometimes that takes 9 months.
Well, I was going to say, with Kokubo, his plan A is to throw the guy, and then his plan B is to go out and talk to him if he's not throwing well. But not take him out.
And then wait till the game's over to have the relievers ready.
Right.
And then 9 months later to say he had some lessons to learn.
Right. So, you know, obviously there's that pitching pool that they have, and he's not really going to make use of that. So this is a real conundrum, I think, for him. And going into this next round, he's going to have to really, you know, if they get into trouble, he's going to have to figure out who he wants to pitch, because now there's no China to kick around in this right. next time.
And the only pitcher he can switch out is Yoshihisa Hirano.
Yeah.
Because he's the only pitcher in the designated pitching pool who's on his roster.
Yeah, he should switch him out too.
And he's not going to, because that's not the plan.
Right. So, you know, game one, they put up a bunch of runs and they saved him from having to make some really tough decisions, I thought. And then in game two, was a typical, I thought, you know, WBC Samurai Japan kind of early round game at Tokyo Dome. They got the good pitching and they got a little bit of power, and they seemed to hit some home runs at Tokyo Dome in these early rounds. And they did do that. They got a tie breaking home run in the seventh inning from Sho Nakata, and then they got another home run later on in the game from Yoshitomo Tsutsugo of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars. And, you know, Sho Nakata, the inconsistent guy that he is, took this – it was a hanger. I mean,
he
took this breaking pitch and just pounded it into the left field seats, and it was, you know, it was a bad pitch. Let's just put it
I think what happened was everybody's been watching him. You know, they've probably been watching all the film of him – hitting fourth for Kokubo, and said, well, we can just throw him anything and he's going to miss it.
Hashtag high.
Because basically he's been lousy, and, you know, and I have to give, I'll tell you, I'm just going to say I told you so to all of our listeners, was, you know, last year, or I take it back, it was during the Premier 12 when Atsunori Inaba, the Samurai Japan batting coach, told me, look, Nakata is just lame in the cleanup spot for us. He puts too much pressure on his shoulders, and he just stops functioning. But if we put Tsutsugo fourth, which they had to do when Nakata got hurt and Nakamura got hurt in the Premier 12, we put Tsutsugo fourth and we put Nakata fifth, it's going to work out. And last year when Kokubo wanted Nakata to bat fourth, he kept saying what a great hitter he was during the Premier 12 when he was batting fifth. And it's really weird because I don't care about batting order at all, but it comes with a little psychological load. You know, it doesn't really matter whether you're batting fourth or fifth, but it does matter to the players.
And some
players it matters a whole lot. And I think with Nakata, he was doing a Kuroda. He's putting so much weight on his shoulders, he couldn't see straight.
Yeah. Interesting. So I think the key in that game was the fifth inning when Tomoyuki Sugano, the Giants ace, had to come off the mound. And
with a pitch count. He reached his pitch limit, yeah.
Basically, yeah. And Kokubo decides to go with Okada, a mediocre Dragons left-hander reliever guy. Just, you know, ugh. Yeah, and he walks the first guy he sees on four pitches and falls behind. Two balls, no strikes to the next batter. And then he throws, I think what they said was like a batting practice fastball or something, and gets a ground ball double play. Just lucky. And I kept lamenting. I was talking to Jeffrey Kusamoto in the stands at the time, and I said, you know, the fighters, Naoki Miyanishi, the left-hander, I think he was built for this situation. Why was he not out there? And of course, you know, guys are talking about velocity and all that stuff, and I'm like, I'm not worried about that stuff. And right after that, that's when Okada induces the double play ball. But Samurai, they were lucky. They win that game 4-2 over Australia. I'm sorry, 4-1 over Australia. So they're 2-0, and you know, they go into the last game against China. It was basically a practice game, and they rested guys, they started other guys, and kind of went through the motions. I thought for sure they were going to mercy rule China, and they didn't. They played, you know, they let them bat in the ninth inning, and and they didn't blow them out of the water or anything. But, you know, they had a really good first round, and I know you said you didn't think that they were going to get out of the first round. I don't think I had them getting out of the second round, so I'm ready to eat those words. I'd like to see them go to the States. I think they're pretty good, but I still don't think that they're going to win. And based on some of the games I've seen already, it looks like the other teams are just, they're playing better. I don't know what the talent level is going to be like. I don't know when they get on the field, but you know, the Samurai Japan guys, they've done this constantly since the WBC started. They looked bad in the warm-up games or the tune-up games, and then when the lights go on, they look a little bit better and they start to play better.
Well, last time they didn't look better when the lights went on. They
a little bit
basically
better,
yeah. Well, they looked like they were WBC, they were vulnerable in all their games in Fukuoka, and then they came up here and they only qualified by the skin of their teeth because of a dramatic comeback against a really lousy Taiwan team.
Yes, and
I mean, last time they were lucky to get to the United States. I mean, it was not a strong group. They let Cuba beat them every chance they had. If it weren't for their being able to beat the Netherlands,
they wouldn't have
luck out against Cuba and get some lucky breaks to beat Brazil and China. You know, they could have died in Fukuoka last time. So that's more or less what I was expecting this time. But obviously, they're playing with a little more intensity, and I think they're better prepared this time. Having lost the last tournament, I think there is a little better preparation on the part of the players.
And now they're going to be in a pool with Israel, which is a team that I kept telling people, well, the Israeli team played really well the last time I saw them play in the WBC. They just didn't have enough to get over the hump. I watched some of their games, and they were competitive games. You know, they'd give up a couple runs here and there, and then they'd create chances. They were like a moped. You know, they had enough speed and power to get into trouble, but they didn't have enough to escape or make something happen. So, but they did it. You know, they got through. The Dutch team was really looking good. They got some stuff. So this is going to be a challenge to get out of this round as well with Cuba. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to try to go to as many games after I get off of the sumo duty and get out of the office. I'm going to go to the ballpark and watch as many games as I can. So I'm looking forward to it, but I have them losing or going out in this round. And
do you still?
I'm going to stick with my pick. I don't see any reason to change.
My pick's done, so I might as well make a new one.
Go ahead.
It doesn't matter anymore.
Make a new one. It's just like a video game.
Mine's gone.
Well, when we used to play video games, they were only a quarter.
So it's not a matter of I'm going to get a better first prediction than you. You've already surpassed me in that category. But I guess the teams I like here are Japan and the Netherlands.
Okay.
I think the Netherlands have more than Israel, than the team that, you know. Here's the other thing. I really don't want to call them Japan. You know, as you know, I don't refer to them as Japan because they're not, you know, any more than Israel is represent. You know, Israel is the team representing Israel.
Well, yeah, I don't blame him for that. But go ahead. Why are you not calling him Japan?
I don't blame him. That's the rules.
Yeah. Why are you not calling him Japan? That's what I want to know.
Well, because they turned down players who they could use.
Yeah, but they're all okay. Well, we don't have time to get into this. We will discuss it next time.
Yeah, but when you don't have Junichi Tozawa because you don't like his career choices, and Kokubo wants him, but the NPB won't let him select him. They're not representing Japan. They're representing NPB. So call him NPB.
All right, let's make a two-seam transition, or is it a four-seam transition? I don't know. It's some kind of transition.
Well, there's four of us.
There are four of us. So joining us now are Claudio Rodriguez from Toronto, the sometimes frequent contributor to JBW on an annual basis during the prediction show. Thank you for coming in, Claudio. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And Jason Cosgrove from right here in Tokyo. Long time no see, buddy.
You saw me yesterday.
another frequent,
well, short memories lead to, you know, give you a life of luck with lots of suspense.
You know, Jason, no. That was the joke, dude. So yeah, a long time no see, and Jason's also a frequent contributor on an annual basis. So we appreciate you guys sitting in, and this should be fun. The Pacific League. It looks like a really fun season coming up. Going to be tough to predict these teams. I predict. And I don't know about you guys, but I had a really good year last year using all the things that I used, including the Ouija boards and all that stuff. And I didn't get the PL winner. I don't think any of us did, but the Fighters had a great season. And obviously it was a close race and most of us did well, I guess. But yeah, let's turn it to this year. And that's me. I get to start it off. So let's talk about the Fighters. They won the Pacific League last year. They have some key additions. Edwin Escobar, who was on the show earlier this year. Taishi Ota, who they traded for. Toru Murata is a guy who went to the Indians organization after playing. He was with the Giants first. Then he went to the States.
Right.
And then their left-handed top draft pick, Mizuki Hori. You know, those are the big additions, I think. The key losses, obviously, Yodai Kong, or Yes We Can, or whatever you want to call him. They lost him to free agency to the Giants. Anthony Bass, who is back in the States trying to build on what he did here last year. Mitsuo Yoshikawa, who is in the Ota trade. A lefty who never really met expectations after his rookie season, I think. And so he was dealt away. And
He met somebody's expectations. He was MVP. I mean...
Right. That's true. That's true. He was an MVP.
True. I mean, he was capable of having a good year by his standards.
And
that's all he needs to be MVP some years.
Right. And then the little lefty, Masaru Takeda, who spent the end of last season carrying around a sign that says, "Win it for me." So they lost him. So at the expected rotation, geez, at some point we expect Shohei Ohtani to get back on the mound. Kohei Arihara, the right-hander. Takayuki Kato, rookie last year who surprised us all. Hirotoshi Matsui, Zenshin Matsui, I call him, you know. Luis Mendoza, and then Hirotoshi Takanashi, the third-year rookie guy who is rookie of the year. And then Naoyuki Uwasawa, who is back from an injury. So those guys might probably make up the rotation. The outlook for me, I thought this team had a lot of things go right. Maybe too much when you think of it, because they had some injuries. They had some guys who slumped and everything. But they surpassed the expectations with the plan Bs they put in there. For example, Zenshin Matsui goes as a failure as a reliever, and he goes to a starter and he becomes a really, really effective starter, and was a big reason down the stretch that they were able to overcome that 11.5 game deficit to the Hawks, and they had a 15 game winning streak and put all that stuff together. Then Shohei Ohtani is no longer allowed or able to pitch. We don't know. You know, went from blister to one thing to another thing, but he doesn't pitch very much in the second half, but he excels as a hitter, and the guys they put out there, the rookies, pitch really well on the mound, and they put a lot of things together to win the PL title and then go on to win the Japan Series. So I don't know. I'm just not sure that they can really duplicate that kind of thing. If somebody goes down, they did lose Bass, as I mentioned before. And he was a kind of a do everything guy. I think it was just a really amazing ride for the Fighters this past season. And when you look at the Hawks, I still think they're pretty strong. And Ohtani not pitching, we don't even know when he's going to pitch. I have a bone spur. I can tell you from experience, it doesn't really get better. If he has surgery at some point, that might cost him the season. So I'm going to say that it's kind of an injury-plagued season for Ohtani. I don't see him doing quite as well as he did last year. And I see a drop-off from the whole team overall. And I'm going to predict that they finish in third.
Interesting.
Let's start with Claudio, since he lives the farthest away.
After the beating Venezuela got last night, I don't know how good I'm predicting things I'm gonna be this year.
How good were you last year, buddy?
Well, last year was horrible. I didn't get a single team right on the Pacific League, so I'm not sure. And after your after what you said, I just got second thoughts because I was picking the Nippon Ham to finish first, so you know I'm way out of my league here. It's like forget it. But no, I the reason I picked them to finish first is even though you know Tani may be injured, and so I still like the whole pitching of Nippon Ham better than SoftBank. I mean, I would have gotten SoftBank on as a first place team. Because they added Despaigne, and you know he's really good, and I think the offense in general is going to improve for the team. But I don't see the pitching, even though they have you know Van der Hurk and they have what's the other really good guy Sofian has.
They're all
forgetting
good.
His name.
What do you mean the other guy?
Senga. No. Hey, wait. I'm disappointed with Takeda, but we'll get to that point after. My point is, I think overall, the Fighters' pitching is still better than SoftBank. So I'm picking them to finish first.
Okay, Jason.
I would pick the Fighters to finish second. I kind of agree with John that they had a lot of things go right for them last year, but I also think that they're still better than most of the rest of the Pacific League because of the way the other teams are built. Their pitching wise, I think, you know, when Ohtani can pitch, I think Ohtani's going to be fine. I think Arihara is a good pitcher.
I think Ohtani is going to be fine. Come on, man. We know he's going to be fine. we just don't know when he's going to pitch.
We know he's going to be fine if he's pitching healthy. If he's pitching through a little bit of pain, or if he's pitching with there's something wrong with him, then he's not going to be fine. But if he's pitching, if he's Ohtani, he's going to be fine. But if he's a little banged up, he might be a little off. And I think Arihara is a good pitcher. For me, Takanashi is a guy I think that's going to be really important for them because you know what you're going to get out of, you know, Mendoza is a good pitcher, and I think they've got some other good guys. But I think if Takanashi can build on what he did last year, I think that would give them a really solid, like, three guys, and then Ike Mendoza, and then whoever else they can throw in. Naoki Miyanishi, who got a MVP vote over Shohei Ohtani.
You still want to find that
Sorry,
guy
that's just
that,
that's
the
still
head.
The best joke of 2016.
Who was that guy?
I know.
One of his parents.
Hashtag.
His mom. I know how that is. Yeah. Tough losing, biggest fan.
I think they're still a really good team. Laird's going to come down some, but he's not going to come down that far. I think he's kind of on a kind of the way Eldridge was when he had a not so great year his first year, and then he kind of picked it up when he had been here for a while. I think Laird's going to come down, but not so far. So I think they're going to finish second. They're a really good team. They can score a lot of different ways, and I think they've got good enough pitching.
All right, second, Jim.
I'm basically in agreement with Jason and Claudio and the Spence. I do really like their pitching. Their offense is really suspect. If their offense is suspect whenever Ohtani's not in the lineup.
And Sho Nakata is in the lineup.
Having said that, I do like that. I disagree with Laird. I think he came to Japan when he was much younger. He came to Japan when he was 26. So he's unlike Brad Eldred. He's not on the, you know, fighting the declining age issue and the increased injury risk that Eldred was facing. But, you know, he's not as good a hitter as Brad Eldred was, but I think he's going to be able to maintain – he has a better chance of maintaining that level. But I think the offense is suspect. Whether Ohtani pitches or not, I don't know. I still think I have my concern, which I don't know if I mentioned it. I mentioned it on Twitter. But Ohtani, the one troubling thing for me about Ohtani is that he became Yuki Inagita last year. He became a guy who hit home runs a lot, who was a ground ball hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Basically hits the ball on the ground or he hits home runs. Hmm. And it's really weird is you see guys who hit a lot of ground balls don't continue to be home run hitters. So last year I was wondering what's going to happen to Inagita because he doesn't fit the profile of a home run hitter. And last year, I mean, I didn't realize it until just like a month or a few weeks ago, actually, when John and I were involved in this project kind of, and I was looking at Ohtani, I'm going, holy smokes. He went from being a fly ball hitter his entire career to being a second half ground ball hitter last year. I mean, an extreme ground ball hitter. And whether that was his choice or his adjustment or pitcher's adjustment to him, that's for me a really big thing for his development going forward.
Okay,
but I like the fighters. I think the fighters second. I think I agree with Jason. They're basically head and shoulders above the other four teams in the Pacific League.
Second place.
Yeah.
All right. So up next are the Hawks. Jason.
The Hawks. I guess we get the mystery out of the way. I think they're going to finish first. But sorry, I went out of turn.
You went out of order, man. You're fired. Order. Send that check back.
Not fired. You're ejected. We don't fire people.
I'm sleepy.
We all are.
Key addition. They got Despaigne from the Marines or from Cuba. Their other big addition. I think it'd be Seiji Tanaka if he can. He can be a really good pitcher for them if in his rookie year. He's coming out of college, so he's not as green as a high schooler would be. So I think he could be a good addition. He doesn't have to be really, really good because they've got other pitchers, so there's no pressure on him. I would count him as a key addition for them. Losses, I don't think they lost anyone particularly that great. Morifuku's gone, and he was useful. Hosokawa was also useful to spell Sudooka. And
yeah, at the catcher position, yep.
Yeah, at the catcher position. So those are the two losses. Rotation-wise, probably going to be a lot similar to last year. Tsuyoshi Wada, Shota Takeda, Kodai Senga, Rick Vandenhoek, Kenichi Nakata for some reason. Then they just got guys who could pitch in that six. It could be Tanaka, it could be Iwasaki, it could be Otonari. They just got arms who just waiting to take somebody's job as soon as someone messes up. So I think they've got a pretty good deep staff that if something happens, they're gonna have a lot of cover for those guys.
Right.
Sarfate at the back in the bullpen, Suarez I really like, and Mori is also a good pitcher. I think they're going to finish first just because I think last year SoftBank had about two really bad months last year and the Fighters went on a 15-game winning streak and that kind of evened everything out and then the Fighters won when they needed to win at the end. I don't think the Hawks should have lost last year. It's just they just went into this inexplicable swoon, or Jim probably can explain it, but inexplicable to me that they went into this swoon. They lost they lost as many games in 2 months as they lost the other months of the year. They were 22-25 in July and August and 61-29 the rest of the year. That cost them the pennant. So, you know, I think Despaigne is going to just have a ball in that park now with the home run terrace and everything. Yanagita was a little banged up last year. If he's healthy, then they're going to be good. I think Matsuda, Uchikawa, those guys, you know what you're going to get. Imamiya is a good defender, and he got a little bit better with the bat. If he can just hit a little bit, he's going to be a big addition just because of his glove and everything. So I think this is a really strong team. I think they should have won last year, and I think they're going to win this year.
Okay, Jim.
Well, I think that hits the hammer on the head. I think I'm pretty much in agreement. I think Despaigne is a huge addition. I think they were lost. They missed, I think, just that extra presence with Inagita. And oddly enough, of course, as we mentioned, Inagita was banged up last year. And as I mentioned, he'd become a ground ball hitter. And So despite that, he was really the best player in the Pacific. He could easily have been the MVP. If the Hawks had won the pennant, he was the MVP. He and Ohtani were very close in terms of value. That being said, he didn't get a single vote for anything. you fall from Mount Olympus, and it's like you're such a lesser god. So I see them winning. And I guess the one comment I want to make is, now we've spoken now about the Fighters and the Hawks for about 10 minutes, and I haven't heard one mention of two pitchers, Yuki Saito or Tadashitsu.
I was going to mention Yuki Saito, and then I thought better of it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I was thinking, wow, our lucky stars, baby. It's like.
Well, no, I'm going to talk about Tadashi Setsu, but I'll wait for my turn.
Okay, it's your turn.
Well, I'm
the Sawamura Award winner, Tadashi Setsu.
Absolutely. Rookie of the Year, Tadashi Setsu. Go for it, baby.
Put some respect on his name.
Ooh.
Absolutely. I've dragged him through the dirt.
Claudio.
Well, no, I just to end the suspense, I don't have any respect for Tadashi Setsu.
I must say, yes. There. How about that respect on your name?
Oh, that's mean. We were counting on you, man.
No. What I was saying before is that SoftBank has a whole bunch of starters that are good, are efficient, the guys that can put some innings on, that can win some games. But compared to before, I was a little disappointing on how they performed last year. True enough, the offense was down. I think Lee DeHoss, the party, affected them more than they thought it was going to. I think the team is going to improve a lot this year with the Spiny coming in. The offense is going to be a lot better. But the pitching, I still have my doubts. I mean, the true, really reliable starters for me are Vanderhoek and Kodai Senga. But Setsu, I don't have any confidence on. Shota Takeda is going down. I don't like him. It's not as good as he was before, even though he's still young. But I don't know. I don't have I'm losing my confidence on him. The other starters, there's a whole bunch of options that they have. And they're good, but they're not I wouldn't put them in a Ohtani status or nothing
is
close to it.
Come on.
No, but I mean, there's other good, you could say, Sugano is a really good pitcher. You would call Sugano an ace, but not, I wouldn't call Tadashi Setsu an ace, at least not now. So that's the reason why I'm picking SoftBank to finish second, because I think overall the starting rotation of Nippon Ham is still better. But obviously, if these guys have a really good offensive season, then SoftBank is going to win, and I wouldn't have any doubts about it.
Yeah, okay. I've got two separate six-man rotations that they could put out there, including Junpei Takahashi, a kid who was drafted a couple years ago now and still hasn't gotten any mound time. And, of course, they got Seigi Tanaka, who could come out there. I mean, we know that the remains of Daisuke Matsuzaka are not likely to be out there on a mound anytime soon. I know that he didn't do well today in the game that he threw. Hayato Terahara is still out there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now Higashihama is there. So I think they still have the best pitching, a lot of it. They did go through this slump last year. They had injuries and slumps at the same time, and I think that's why they had those bad months, and nobody could pull them out of it. But I don't see that happening again. They have too much talent. You know, this team is stacked. I was trying to think of how Alfredo Linguini d'Espagne is going to eat his way out of the lineup. And I saw him at the WBC, and he was poking out of his uniform. I don't think that bodes well for them, but he can DH. I don't think that's a problem.
He got hurt standing in left field the other day.
And he's chasing down balls. I'm like, dude, stop it, man. You could hurt yourself. But anyway, this team, it led in team OPS, first in quality starts, lowest in batting average against, best in Ks per nine out there on the mound as a staff overall, and there's no reason why you could think that they're going to fall. I think you failed to mention Claudio Tsuyoshi Wada. I think he's still going to be effective. you know, I looked at the number of wins that teams have had over the past 5 years. I went through and I averaged them all out.
Oh, my gosh.
The winning teams in the Pacific League have gotten 82.2 victories. And you guys might recall that Oryx, 2014, Oryx had 80 wins and the Hawks had 78. And Oryx failed to win because they lost, or they lost that last game, or was it a tie? I don't remember. But anyway, I just can't see them getting fewer than 80 wins. So I think I'm gonna stick with them to be finishing first again this year. I don't see how they, I don't see any drop off again. Like they had last year. I think they'll ration it out, the playing time. They've got some young kids, Uebayashi being one of them, an outfielder. I think they're going to be fine, and they'll bounce back to finish first.
Well, they still got, like, what, 82 wins last season, the Hawks, but lost because, you know, the Nippon Ham has this, had this unbelievable season. But
they had 83, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so
and
I
the
still
Fighters
see
had
them.
87.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I there's no doubt on SoftBank winning 80 plus games this year. The thing is, you know, whether Nippon Ham is going to have another successful season, probably not. But that would be the question. And yes, you're right. I forgot about WADA. I do have faith in WADA as well.
Okay. All right.
I would just like to see Setsu and Yoshikawa pitch for the title of the greatest one-year wonder season ever in the past 10 years.
Well, and we could throw the handkerchief Prince in there, but he'd be like a one inning wonder. All right, Claudio with the Marines.
All right, so for the Marines, I have key additions: Dominican Jimmy Paredes. I have American.
Oh, why did
American
he come first?
Just the first one that came to my mind.
Because
myself.
He's named Jimmy. Why not?
Because none of us can say his last name. What is it? What is it?
Paredes. Paredes.
Okay, I got it.
All right. We have Matt Duffy, and we have the number one draft, Chihaya Sasaki. Yep. For key losses, obviously, Alfredo Despaine. I don't think Jamaico Navarro was a big loss for them. He didn't do that much last year. But, you know, it was a power hitter. It was a presence. So they may feel like, you know, a little naked, let's say, by not having another power hitter on the team. The expected rotation, I would say, is Ayumu Ishikawa, Hideaki Wakui, Yuta Omine, Takahiro Fujioka, Jason Standridge, I'm guessing will still be there. I would probably add Chihaya Sasaki to the rotation, depending on how he does, in his debut. And they all have other options. Takuya Furuta, I don't know how healthy he is. Yuki Karakawa can pitch every now and then. So they have some arms there. Now, I mean, not the best rotation in the world, but I don't remember whether I heard you guys saying it on the show or was it something I read, but somebody had said that, you know, was praising Tsutomu Ito for his work as a manager, because even though the team is not the best, every year he keeps them competing. So
yeah,
I would say the same.
That was Choji Murata.
Exactly.
Ito was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So I agree with that. I mean, it's not the greatest rotation in the world. It's not the greatest team in the world, but they keep competing. They keep staying there and you know, get into the playoffs. So, well, my prediction for them is actually this year is fourth place, mostly because they are losing Despaine, and Despaine was like, you know, number one offensive guy for the team last year. So it's a big presence to lose. I don't think Paredes is going to come and just take his spot. It's going to be difficult to do that. Not sure what to expect about from Matt Duffy, even though he has already, what, three homers in the preseason. So he could, you know, do well. But overall, I think the team is going to, it's going to stay competitive, but it's going to lose some ground. And because of that, I'm predicting for them to finish fourth.
Okay, Jim.
I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, they have a couple of players. I'm not going to repeat anything that Claudio said. Other than that, I would say, Claudio, I would pay money to listen to you pronounce Japanese names. It sounds so musical.
I'm paying the money
compared to the way I say it. Gary, it's like Dolby surround sound. It's really beautiful. Anyway, there's a couple of things I'd add about the Marines. I do love absolutely they compete. They come well prepared. They have good approaches. I love Daichi Suzuki. He's grown a little bit as a player, as a presence on the field. Tamura's, you know, my favorite player who looks kind of a koala-like.
Hasn't grown a glove.
And he's a heck of a, he's the best catcher in the Pacific League for my money.
Yep.
I don't see the pitching. I think Ishikawa is really something. I don't see the pitching getting any better. And that's the thing. I don't really see them going forward. As I think Ito is going to keep them from finishing in a team that could easily finish last.
Right.
I see them finishing. I'm going to say they're going to finish fifth this year.
Okay.
Just because the other four teams are all more or less more the other teams are as talented and probably more have higher aspirations than the Marines do.
Right. All right, so for me, in the rotation, it was Ryota Sekiya and Kota Futaki. Those two guys last year were big surprises, and I look for one of them to take a step forward and the other one to maybe either stay the same or fall back a little bit. And then Jason Standridge, who knows how much we're going to get out of him. I'm pretty sure this is going to be his last season because he was talking about retirement or, you know, calling it quits or going back home around the end of last season anyway. So I think, again, they probably do take a step back as a team. Matt Duffy, I know, he, just like you said, Claudio, he's hit some home runs in the preseason, but that happens a lot with some foreign guys. And when the lights come on, the bats go off sometimes. And so it's really hard to gauge that stuff. Do I see 80 or 70-something wins for this team? I really don't. In the past 5 years, they've only averaged about 69 wins per season. So I just don't see it happening here either. But this is really hard. I think the Pacific League is really bunched up like the Central League was last year, or has been the past 2 years. I think it's bunched up right now because we've got some mediocrity among these teams that are, you know, not maybe championship contenders on paper, but it's really hard. So I really pored over this today and came up with a fourth place prediction, but it was really hard. I want to pick a surprise, and I do have a surprise for you guys, but it's, you know, it's really hard to make this team my surprise team, so I'm going to pick them to finish fourth. Jason?
The Marines, to me, like kind of like Jim said, I don't think they got any better. There are a lot of what ifs for me on that team. What if Futaki is good? What if Sasaki is good? What if Karakawa, you know, has turned something around?
Stop it.
No. What if Wakui remembers he's Wakui? And, you know, it's just Ishikawa, the sure thing for me. I think Inoue, if he plays a lot, he could be a good addition for them. But I don't see how they're going to score any runs. I'm not high on their pitching. I actually think they're going to finish fifth because I don't see how they got very much better.
Not very high marks for the Marines. All right, the Lions are next, and that's me. So nobody wants to do this team because of all the flack some fans give people, but I don't really care. I don't care. And if the fans were, you know, if the fans were managers, then they'd be catching flack because there'd be fans like them out there. So
I think I follow that.
The key additions, I think, are right-hander Tatsuya Imai, their top draft pick, and then Brian Schlitter, a right-handed pitcher who's looking to be their new closer. And I really couldn't find any guys of – I mean, they've added some people, but I don't know if they're keys or not, so I'm going to stop there. The key loss, of course, is Takayuki Kishi, the right-handed ace who went to the Eagles, and that's basically about it. They got rid of some guys who really didn't contribute all that much, so I can't say that they lost a lot. The expected rotation, UC – Kikuchi, this guy is starting his eighth year. Can you guys believe that? It seems like only yesterday that he was out there trying to throw a curve and couldn't get it over and then getting his fastball lit up. But, you know, those days are gone, right?
Hashtag Paiji.
Control yourself, John. Come on.
Trying to. Ken Togame, Shin Saburo Tawata, the guy with a very stately name. I like it. I think I heard some people saying that he was really good in camp and that he's going to be really a lot better than he was last year. And he was pretty serviceable as a rookie. Kona Takahashi, Brian Wolf is there. And if he's healthy, I suspect he will contribute. but his problem has always been healthy and being on the mound. So we'll see how that goes. Ryoma, Nogami, a couple of others probably will get some opportunities. Maybe Keisuke Honda, second-year guy. And then Alexis Candelario, is that how you say it? Is that good enough?
That's not, yes. That's not how Claudio says it.
Well, so the outlook, this is long. This is long-winded for me, but I think the Lions are more like a family that goes to the neighborhood diner. And, you know, the mom, she's not paying attention to the kids and she's smoking. And the kids are running around they're running around the restaurant, and the father's trying to pick up on the waitress, and you know, they just don't seem organized. And I think they've got a new manager with Tsuji out there, and I think he's going to work on that defense. He already has. I think this kid Sosuke Genda, he's probably going to get the start at short, and he looks like he can play defense. If he hits enough, it'll really be a bonus. Tsuji says he's got high expectations of Kikuchi as the ace, and he said he wants him to win more than 16 games, I saw in an interview this year. And
But that's he was required to say that when he accepted the job as manager. Every potential Lions manager has to say Kikuchi's going to win 16 games. It comes in the contract.
Oh, no. So I think those expectations are way too high. I mean, you know, a lot of listeners know my opinion of him. I really don't see him any better than a number three, number four starter in Japan. And, you know, I admit win-loss record isn't the be-all, say-all, but be all, whatever it is, all. But I know he's been victimized by poor defense, and sometimes, you know, there's always something, you know, whether it's a close game that they don't score for him, or somebody doesn't close the game out of the bullpen, or he's got a cramp, or there's always something. But anyway, I have all these bad things to say about the Lions, but Hideto Asamura switched numbers. He's the captain now. He's number three. He's refocused himself. You know, Tomoya Mori took a pitch off of the elbow the other day, and it's broken, and hopefully he'll get healthy and get back out there and contribute. But I always tell you guys that there has to be a surprise, and I can't see us picking the same teams for 3 years in a row to finish in the top three. So I'm going to predict that somehow, some way, the Lions, who have averaged, 68-plus wins the past five seasons, figure out a way to get to maybe 70 wins and sneak into a playoff spot. And in fact, I have them finishing second because I'm crazy.
Well, John, you're not crazy.
I am, because I had nothing but bad things to say about them. But I think, you know, guys like Hotaka Yamakawa is going to come along, and somebody's going to break out, and they're going to get the pitching on the mound somehow, whether it's an import or young. You know, they drafted a bunch of pitchers 2.5 years ago. Maybe those guys start to one of them starts to contribute. I don't know. Somehow, maybe they can finish second. I'm just trying to pick an upset here. Claudio, you're next.
I believe the Lions have the potential to be a really good team. They have a really good offense. They have guys that can hit the ball well. I love Mejia, for instance. I love Okawari-kun. You know, Akiyama is there. Kuriyama is there. They have good players, good hitters.
And they score a lot of runs if they just play defense.
Exactly, they can score a lot of runs too, so they have the potential. But my thing is always the pitching, and I've been saying that for years already. I, you know, they have guys that are good, guys that can put some innings, but they lack consistency. They have those stretches where they pitch really well, like for a couple of months, and then they stop and they don't keep pitching at the same level. So and it's basically the same guys. There's no, and plus Kishi is gone now, so I don't see them all of a sudden becoming this playoff contending team that's going to make a difference in the league this year. I mean, they may get there, but I don't see them doing it. So for me, I'm picking them to finish fifth.
Can I change my pick?
No. Well, yeah, sure you can. Nobody cares.
Well, not yet. I'm sticking with it. There's got to be an upset.
You can change on April 1st, you know.
Yeah, you know, I really think they're close. I think if they just shore up that defense, that they're gonna compete, because that was their problem. They gave up way too many runs. Okay, Jim, you're next.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm gonna do my best John Gibson impression.
Okay, change your voice.
I think I'm going to pick the Lions to finish fourth, which I think is a surprise. But I'm in absolute agreement with John, the defense. But here's my thing. Are they going to score runs? Yes. And they could potentially score a huge number of runs. And the reason for that is Yamakawa. Yamakawa is an amazing, you know, if he produces a season nearly as good as the half a season he had last year, then he's Yoshitomo Tsutsugo. I mean, that's huge. Asamura has moved up. And here's the thing. With the Lions are one of these old school Japanese teams, and I don't mean that in a good way or a bad way, but they're one of these teams that basically that whatever the manager says, that's what we're going to do. So new manager comes in. The Hawks are the same way. New manager comes in. Okay, this year we're going to try to bunt. Okay, we're going to bunt. And it's like the team changes 180 degrees. The Lions are one of those teams. Tsuji, I've spoken very little with him. I remember him as a player. I saw what he did working with the Dragons. The Dragons loved him. He was very effective the one time he was their minor league manager, won a pennant. He's very well organized. He was a tremendous defensive player. And what I see, I see them as just narrowly missing the playoff spot. But I also here's the thing. The last three Lions managers who were brought in as new managers to start the season mm-hmm. won the Japan Series. Won the Pacific League pennant and played in the Japan Series. Ihara, the last three rookie managers, Ihara, Ito, and Nabekyo. We can't really count Tanabe. He was brought in as a mid-season replacement and kept it because nobody had the guts to realize he wasn't going to do the job or to say he wasn't going to do the job. He just figured he'd grow into it. It means nothing, but I think he is going to do what the Swallows did 2 years ago, which is really improve the defense. And when you really improve the defense, the pitchers are going to look like they're going to fix a huge part of that, you know, Claudio problem. They're going to look a lot better. I mean, it's going to be much easier when they can make mistakes. And with that offense, they'll be able to make mistakes more and more often and get away with them. So I see the Lions as a very credible number two. I don't think that's far-fetched at all. I'm going to pick them number four because I have a different surprise in mind.
Okay. Jason.
Yeah, I kind of echo what Jim said about Yamakawa. I think he has the potential to be a really good player for them. And I do think, as everyone else, I think they're gonna score a lot of runs. That's just what they do. That's their MO. The one thing that does give me pause is Tsuji coming in, and you know, if we're gonna bunt more, that's fine if you have the kind of team, the kind of makeup that you can do that with. I don't know if you can do that with this team. I don't know if they're gonna be particularly effective at it or that good at it. I don't think the offense is broken, but they are kind of a one-trick pony, and it's hard to hit every day of the season. You know, the Nashita's Kintetsu Buffaloes did it. Yomiuri Giants did it in 08. But you know, how many teams are going to just score that many runs?
Right.
And to overcome this pitching staff that I think has some problems. Kikuchi is like kind of one of my guilty pleasures, I think, because I like him.
Stop it. Stop it. You can get help. You can have an intervention.
You know.
Yeah, there is actually an intervention line. John's got his finger on the hotline right now. He's going to take us both away.
That does sound like we need to get Criminal Minds on this thing, though. A guilty pleasure. What are you talking about? But anyway, go ahead.
if Tawata, I agree with you that Tawata, he had a decent rookie year, and he can probably get better. Takahashi, if Nogami's arm is still on after all the bullpen sessions he threw during the spring.
What did he have, like a 430-something pitch bullpen session?
Right.
Nutty.
Yeah.
After he pitched in a game.
The catcher was standing up.
But I really after Kikuchi and if Tawata is better, I don't know who's really good on this team. Wolfie, if he's healthy, but even if he's healthy, you know, Wolfie's not changing the world. And you know, I don't see Nogami doing much of anything. Kona Takahashi, sorry about that. I think he has some potential, but I don't see the pitching there. And I think if you don't have the pitching, there are going to be days where your bats just don't hit, and there are going to be a lot of those days where another team is going to score a bunch of runs on you. You're going to lose even when you score. You're going to lose a 7-8 game or a 10-9 game or something like that. And the defense is going to be, again, a work in process. Sosuke Genda is going to take over shortstop, and I kind of have the, he looks like he's going to be good there. But, you know, that's a lot of ifs there. But I think he's going to be solid. I don't know who's going to catch, because there was the thought Morey might catch, which would help the offense. But then, like you said, he got hurt. We'll see what happens with him. But I picked them to finish fourth just because I don't know if they're going to be able to out-hit their pitching staff, if their pitching staff is as bad as it might be.
Okay, a lot of fourth place votes. Interesting. Like I said, I think this is going to be close. These races are really going to be tight. All right, Claudio, you have the Eagles.
Yes. So for the Eagles, I have for the key additions, Takayuki Kishi. Takayuki Kishi has been injured the past couple of years. I don't know how big of a difference it's going to make, but I think it's a good presence. He's a good pitcher. I like him. It's just a matter of him being healthy or not. But I think his presence is going to help. They have a number one draft pick, Fujihira Shoma, and they have Frank Herman, which I think is going to be a reliever. For the key losses, well, they, you know, got rid of a whole bunch of foreign players. I don't see any of them really being a big, you know, an important loss. But I would say Cuban Felix Perez deserved another chance. He did well. I mean, he wasn't outstanding, but he had similar numbers to what Amador and Peguero did last year.
Yeah, but you remember they brought him in, and then right after that they signed Peguero, and then that was it.
He hit a home run in his first two games, he was doing fine. He played like for six games, and then they kicked him out because they signed Peguero. But, I mean, he came back afterwards at the end of the season, and he did some decent numbers. I mean, they could have just kept him on the team. He was probably not going to be an everyday player, but he's like a guy that that could contribute when you need somebody to be there temporarily. So I don't know. I mean, I thought he deserved another chance. Then Cam Mikulayo, Mitsutaka Goto, and I mean, they released a whole bunch of players. Again, I don't think any of them was really a key loss, but those are the names that I remembered. The expected rotation, Takahiro Norimoto, Takayuki Kishi, Yoshinao Kamata, I think is one of them. I'm actually not sure. Takahiro Shiomi, Wataru Karashima, Manabu Mima, I guess. I don't know how healthy he is. They also have Tomohiro Anraku and Shoma Fujihira, the number one draft pick. I believe, actually, I'm picking my surprise team will be the Eagles. I think I liked what they did last year. They came back. I think presence of Masataka Nishida as a skipper has given them some confidence and has organized the team a little bit. They did well last year. They were in fourth place. They fell down at the end, but I think they can build on that. I think the pitching can improve a little bit with Kishi coming in, especially if he has a good season. I think the offense is going to improve having Amador and Peguero for a full season. Hopefully they stay healthy, they don't get injured. But if they stay healthy, I think that the offense is going to improve a lot.
Yeah, those are two guys that can... Don't get hit on the wrist.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. But I mean, there's guys that can put some home runs and help. I mean, one of the big weaknesses that the Eagles have had for the past couple of years is the offense. They have been terrible in producing runs. So if they keep if they have Amador and Peguero playing the full season and doing it well, I think they're going to improve a lot, and because of that I'm picking them to finish third.
All right, see, I love the way Claudio pronounces the Latin names. It's just beautiful. Jason.
The Eagles to me are, I think Kishi's a really big addition if he's healthy, and because that gives them a second really good pitcher that they haven't really had that since they had Tanaka and Norimoto. Now Norimoto's the number one and Kishi's number two. I'm done waiting for Shiomi to be good because he looked like he was going to be really a really decent pitcher when he was a rookie, and he just has pretty much stayed at the same level that he's been on. Mima is Mima. Yeah. I like Kamata. But I think their pitching staff, I don't think it's great, but I think it's good. And I don't think that distinction is really, really big, as far as I think they're going to have some games where they're going to look pretty good. They're going to have some weeks, maybe like the Bay Stars did, where you say, how are these guys doing this? Now, I don't think they're going to do anything crazy, but I think they're going to be decent as a pitching staff. And I think their offense is going to be like Claudio. I kind of agree with Claudio. I think their offense is going to be better. I think if they're a little bit healthier, Amador especially, is going to give them something. And it's not as much of a surprise as it would have been, because Claudio said it, but I actually had them finishing third too, because partially because I think they will be a little bit better, partially because I think that they're going to do better against the Marines and the Buffaloes. And maybe the rotation works where they can get Norimoto and Kishi to pick off some of the top teams on enough days. And because I also don't want to have the same three teams in the playoffs as last year. But I do actually think the Eagles have a chance to be better. And there's always one team that surprises people, and it's probably going to be Oryx, but I'm going to think that it's the Eagles, and I'm picking them third.
Okay.
Which team surprised us last year in the Pacific League?
Did anyone think
of okay, yeah, just, that was just for the in the whole NPB. There's always one team. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was actually the Eagles, because I didn't think they would do that well, you know, last year. I think they were the surprise. But go ahead, Jim, on this year.
Well, I'm going to make it 3 third place votes in a row.
Wow.
And I would have gone higher, except just the gap is, you know, the gap between those four pretenders and the two contenders is, you know, the Eagles are, I guess, best poised to be Chrissy Hynes in that group. So, I'll say this, and my logic is about as weak as it gets. I'm gonna put myself behind John's Lions logic and just say, well, Masataka Nishida has basically been the second year wonder. He's had a lot in common with Senichi Hoshino as a manager. First year, not, you know, okay, showed some stuff, but what I like about Nishida, and I'll say it again, is he has a plan. He learns from his mistakes. He learns a lot. He's shown a lot of growth. He won a pennant in his second year with Kintetsu after finishing last. He won a pennant in the second year with Nippon Ham, I think, after finishing fifth. I don't think that's going to happen with Rakuten, because they're Rakuten and they don't have enough raw materials right now. But I think he looks, you know, he knows what to do with the players. He knows, you know, the plans that probably, you know, this player has to make this adjustment. This player has to make that adjustment. If they can, they're going to be there. If they're not, he'll find somebody else who wants to do it. So I like them to finish third this year. And I think I don't see it happening second, but third, yeah.
All right. Well, for me, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was the Bay Stars were like this. The first half of, you know, you've got six games each week, and the first three, they were really competitive because they had enough pitching, and maybe they'd win two out of three. And then the second three games of the week, they were pathetic. And that's what I see with the Eagles, that they're going to have a good top of the rotation situation, where Kishi will be out there, Norimoto will be out there, and some third guy, and hopefully it's not Mima. And then after that, you're just going to have to try to piece it together the rest of the week, and then get to Monday and rest, and get your good guys out there. The thing about the Eagles is they have only won more than 70 games in a season one time since 2012, and that was the year, of course, Makun, Masahiro Tanaka, got him to 82 wins in a Japan Series title. So, you know, before that and since that, it's been in the 60s, and 57 wins was their lowest. So I just can't see where they're going to get to 70 wins. I can't piece it together in any prediction. I would love to see it. You know, I do like the uniforms. I like what's his name. I like Louis. I like the uniforms.
Okay, that's better. That puts you down the list. You like the uniforms.
And I like Louis Okoye.
Wayne, but that's a Wayne Grassick pick.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there as a joke. Okay. I like Louis Okoye, but he's hurt. Maybe when he gets back up, he'll be able to help them. But, you know, 70 wins, I don't see that. Zealous Wheeler doesn't have enough zeal to hustle his way around, you know, to get them to 770 wins. I don't see it. It might be time for Yuki Matsui to become a starter, though, because if he's a starter and you put him in the rotation and he's effective and you bring in some imports. You know, the other thing is that Eagles haven't spent a lot of money on an import player since Kevin Youkilis. And that signing was he lacked games played, and I think they felt like they made a splashy play for a player that just kind of got them all wet and didn't work for them. So maybe they'll make some midseason acquisition or something. I'll have to see, but until then, I got him actually falling off and finishing in fifth this year.
You know, the guy I like with them is Tomohiro Anraku.
I like him. I hope he gets the chance to pitch the whole season and stays healthy.
Oh, he will. I think given that rotation, yeah, I think he's going to get a number of chances, and when he makes the adjustment, he could be good, provided his arm remains attached to his body.
Yeah, I got him in that second half of the week part of the rotation, though, not the first half of the week. All right, we got to move along to the Buffaloes, the last team. Yay, Jason.
All right. I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm even keel on the Buffaloes, but when it comes to this time of the year, when it comes to predicting, I hate the Buffaloes.
Okay. Nice preface.
Just don't leave us in doubt there.
Well, I say that because when you have any sort of faith in them, they finish last.
Yeah.
When you write them off, they almost win the pennant.
Yeah, right. Just smash a pie in the face at the beginning and then see what happens. All right, go ahead.
Key additions. Taisuke Yamaoka could be a decent addition for them. Stefan Romero, he better be a decent addition for them if they want to do anything this year, because they don't have a whole lot else. Key losses, number one is Yoshio.
Wait. Not key losses. Key escapees.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, key escapee, number one, Yoshio. Key escapee, number two, Itoi. There's no one else of consequence. I mean, Blanco's not there. Komatsu retired, which was a surprise. He was a rookie of the year a while back. But Bogusevich is gone. Cordier is gone. But, I mean, neither one of them did a ton of stuff for them. And again, even if they did, they finished last with them. So,
you guys all right?
Finished last without them.
I don't have a lot of confidence in the Buffaloes. I think that, like the Marines, I don't see where they got better. Maybe if Romero turns into a really good player, then maybe they got better with him. Tio Okada has always been a decent guy. Nakajima, he's past his prime. He's serviceable, and that's about it. Morello, he's serviceable. Well, he's serviceable, I guess. That's about it. But, you know, Adachi is a really good defensive shortstop, and I don't see them scoring a whole lot of runs, and I don't see them. Now, the one thing I do have promise about the Buffaloes is if, you know, Kaneko could be healthy again, and he might become a pretty decent pitcher again. Nishii, if he gets himself under control, because after whatever happened to him last year, Dixon he's steady. He's not spectacular, but he's not bad, and he's just a steady pitcher. You kind of know what you're going to get out of him. So I do have – there is some promise there. They got Phil Kokin, who can go into the bullpen. They got Matt West that they can use somewhere in the pitching staff. So I think there is some promise for their pitching, but I don't think there's enough promise as a whole for the team for me to pick them out of sixth.
All right, Jim.
I'm going to go back. I'll say I've got them sixth also. And it's not because I lack faith in the actual talent that these players possess, but the talent that they apply themselves has been severely hurt in the past by this just really crummy organization. Now they've taken steps to rectify that, but the people in charge are basically managing their former teammate Fukura, and that. Basically, they're going to give Fukura enough rope to hang himself and say, okay, this managing thing didn't work out. And if they make an improvement, it'll be next year. They have, and as Jason said, and as everyone's going to say, these, you know, I look at the guy second, Nishino could be a heck of a player at second base. Adachi could be a much better shortstop than he is, provided he's healthy and he concentrates on his playing all year. Which is hard enough, but you know the best players can do it. Shuta could be a heck of a player, but he hasn't become one. Hikaru Ito could be the best catcher in the Pacific League, but He has not decided to go that course. It's just over and over and over again. This team could suddenly be, you know, be the you know, rival for second place, but it just, I just don't see it happening with this organization. They have to show that they mean business, and they haven't shown it yet.
Okay.
So sixth.
All right. Claudio.
Yeah, I also have them finishing sixth. I don't see them, you know, improving a whole lot this year compared to what they did last year. You know, they have some new guys that may contribute, but I pretty much agree with what Jason and Jim said. I mean, I don't see this team. They have the talent, but I don't see them all of a sudden coming together and having a really good season this year. So I just really have zero expectations for Oryx this year. So I'm picking them to finish last.
All right. So using my restaurant analogy, this is the fighting couple team. They come into the restaurant. They're making a noise. You know, they're making a big what to do about nothing. And they're just obnoxious and you want them out, you know. And we had the front office situation where guys were fighting and bickering, and so there's addition by subtraction because they've gone through and they've cleaned some people out of the front office. And I'm still going to call them the Buffaloes with an L-O-W-S at the end until they show me otherwise. The talent is there. We've seen it. I've talked about it. They have good pitching. They play good enough defense. Yoshio Itoi's absence was going to be probably felt early on, but I think they'll make an adjustment and somebody will step up for that team. And they'll be all right on the field, but I just don't see how the organization lends itself to winning. Leadership, bad organization. I'm not going to go dining in a restaurant with these people anywhere. There's no winning atmosphere. I've got them finishing 13th out of the 12 teams.
Which, you know, what I want to say is, John, just let me know whatever restaurant it is you go to so I can stay away from it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, if they keep using those, you know, picnic thing of uniforms that they use every now and then, that's going to
– pink and blue.
That is the best thing about Oryx.
What stupid uniform they're going to have next?
Wow, stick the knife in.
All right, so I put out to the usual suspects, Wayne Grosick, Michael Westbay, Patrick Newman, and NPB Reddit. And the only one to come back with his picks on time was NPB Reddit, so I'll read his. He's got SoftBank finishing first, Nippon Ham second, the Rakuten Eagles third. There seems like to be a theme
here.
Wow,
that's amazing.
Yes,
this is a theme, yeah. What have I done? He's got Cebu fourth, Lotte fifth, and Oryx finishing last, and there seems to be a theme there. So thank you, guys. We have some questions, some high heat. We'll get to it probably right after the season starts. We'll have the CL prediction show next week. Thank you for hanging in for a really long show. Thank you for waking up early, Claudio, and staying up late, Jason and Jim. We will talk to you guys next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.